want that feeling again of coming off the pitch and feeling like inadequate, inept, a class below. It's an embarrassing feeling and your pride takes an absolute battering.
Maybe the best player in the world against maybe the best goalkeeper in the world. Saved it!
My legs were just like, I swear, I couldn't feel them. It was just like, I allowed it probably to get to me too much, and God knows what would have happened if I'd have had to go and take a penalty.
Match point, Manchester United, Anelka. Van der Sar saved it! United again!
So he saved the penalty. He went the opposite way to what I was telling him. I had to thank him after. Don't ever listen to me again. That team would never have been fulfilled if we hadn't won that trophy. To be considered really great at Man United, you've got to win the Champions League.
Rio Ferdinand and Ryan Giggs lift the trophy. 2008 was always going to be a special year for Manchester United.
It was the drunkest I've ever been in my whole life. There was a couple of fans that just managed to blag their way in. I went drink for drink with this guy in terms of downing pints. Probably the worst decision I made because I was in a bad way, man.
2008, a year fresh in the memory and yet so far away. Credit crunch was hitting hard. Banks were going to the war. Woolworths too. The Olympics were in Beijing. In football, they had a Euros, but not for England. But the English club game was dominating, with Manchester United beating fellow Premier League side Chelsea in that year's Champions League final. Yep, so long ago that United were not only qualifying for the Champions League, but winning the thing. Well, joining us today, the man who captained that United side and lifted the trophy into the Moscow skies, Rio Ferdinand. Hello, Rio.
How you doing, James? Lovely to meet you again. You good?
Yeah, very, very well. Delighted you could be with us for this Rio Wind, as I'm calling it.
I couldn't decline it. Just hearing your voice and then the way you intro that just takes me back to my youth.
Well, indeed. Well, that's very kind of you. Very kind of you. Listen, when you hear the Champions League music, what do you think of?
Oh, it just takes me back to probably the best day of my life on a football pitch, if I'm honest. I don't know, the sense of importance when that music comes on, when it first comes on, as soon as you hear it, you know where you're at. You know what's about to go down. You know that this is another level to what you're used to being accustomed to. As great as the Premier League is, I love it. I wouldn't change it for the world. But as we saw the other day at the Bernabeu, as we saw at Villarreal the other day, as we've seen in the last few seasons, especially in the knockout stages, What that brings is a whole new level of craziness, excitement, of standard of football. It's unreal.
Few English players will have experienced that moment of standing on a pitch, hearing that anthem. As often as you played in no fewer than three Champions League finals. You also came really close to reaching the final game with Leeds back in, 2001, no?
Yeah, and Leeds had a great time in the Champions League as well. Barcelona and in the new camp, etc. I think Lazio as well. They played some big teams around that time, and it was a love affair that Leeds had with the Champions League. The fans who travelled away in Europe used to stay behind, and the lads would go out after the getting changed and do a sing-song with them. All little things like that, and you just think, wow, I immediately realised how big the Champions League was, because before that, you see it on telly, oh yeah, it's big, but once you get in it, your whole idea and understanding of actually how humongous this is and the importance was just crazy. And then we got to the semi-final and we played Valencia, who actually at that time we never realised, but were probably the one, two, three best teams in Europe. They got to the final twice, I think, in 2 years or two or 3 years. Never won it, but they had an amazing team. They've smashed us 3-0 at their stadium. It was almost a moment of all so close, but yet so far. And that picture, to be fair, was an inspiring picture throughout my career going forward. I had a picture in the Yorkshire Evening Post, I think it was called. And it was a double page spread. It was a picture of me just kind of slumped. You crouch down, hand on the floor, head down. And it just showed the devastation in one picture. Couldn't have been encapsulated any better.
Wow. All right, well, highs and lows in the Champions League. Why is it so much bigger than any other kind of football, Champions League?
I think it's the hardest thing to win. It's the hardest to win. And I played in great teams at Man United. The Leeds team was a very good team, but I played in great teams at Man United that didn't get close to winning it. They were beaten by better teams, were beaten by bigger stars in their teams. The year we lost, we got beat by Real Madrid, the Galactico team. Like, I played in that game and I'd just come to United that season, and it was like, oh my God. I'm considered one of the best players in the Premier League because of the fee that they paid for me, playing for England, doing really, really well, captain of Leeds before I went to Man United. And I walked onto the pitch at the Bernabeu, walked off of it and thought, wow, I'm miles off it. I'm nowhere near where I need to be. I'm nowhere near where I think I am. I've got to go back to the drawing board. There's levels here that I've got to get to and gears I've got to go through to try and attain top level, top tier understanding and to be able to sit at the top table and feel comfortable. I'm way off it. And no other competition brings those moments to you, I've found in my career. No other competition where really do it well, and as often where you go, actually, I'm playing against a collection of the greatest players and teams, not just now, but ever. Mm. Whether I was, because I was playing in the era I was playing, I don't know. I lost two finals to Barcelona, probably, in my eyes, the best club team to ever play football. Am I unfortunate? Was I lucky? Do you know what I mean? You can look at it both ways.
Well, we'll talk about those games, but we'll also talk about the 2008 final when you were the right end of the victory. You got to lift the trophy. That season, first of all, that Man United team, you just won back-to-back titles, no? As you come into that Champions League final. You've said that you feel that side, that United side, doesn't get the recognition it deserves. Why do you think that is?
That team can compete in any era, I think, because of the type of players that we had. We had defenders that were mobile and quick, who could take the ball but could also fight and would stand up to any type of physical battle. We had midfielders that could also do the same but were also great technicians who could control the tempo of games, could score goals. And we had a front line to die for. Cristiano Ronaldo, Wayne Rooney, Carlos Tevez. They compete in any era. They're a devastating trio who would give every single back four, back three nightmares in a game. And so I just feel that we would compete in any era. We'd be a threat to every single team. We could stand up and fight with every team. I would definitely feel, I feel that, again, we won 3 years on the bounce, we won the league. No other team's done that other than a Man United team years gone by before that. No other team in Premier League history has done that. We got to 3 Champions League finals in 4 years. And when we won the Champions League, we won the league. And we won the League Cup that year as well. We done the bog standard treble, I think. But what I mean is like, we didn't just win the Champions League and come fifth or sixth or come second.
Yeah.
We won the league and we won the Champions League. We got back to the Champions League final and we won the league again that year. The team was a joke. And it wasn't just about the 11 players that started that I'm mentioning there. Players like John O'Shea, Darren Fletcher, Wes Brown, Rafael, I think the Silver Twins might have been about then as well, whatever. But there's players, Chicharito even coming in later. We had players that other people go, oh, how are they at Man United? Or you used to hear people say stupid things like that, like outlandish. The importance of the 22-man squad, you can't put a number on how important that is. Like, to have someone, Giggsy was coming on in games and changing games and changing the tempo, seeing games out for us. Like, you got people that are coming in and impacting as much as we need for the first 11 as for when they come on. They're so important.
Of all those players, and there's some incredible names, who do you think was the best player in that squad?
After me, no, I'm joking. The best player, listen, Cristiano Ronaldo. He was the most decisive player we had. Hardest thing to do is put the ball in the back of the net. And he used to do it beautifully, devastatingly, decisively. And I think in the big moments around that period of time, the first player you looked to pull the magic and rabbit out of the hat was him.
Right.
Because you knew he could do it as well. I loved Wayne Rooney. I loved Carlos Tevez. I loved playing behind Carrick and Scholes for the way that they all played. Beautiful game. Mm. But as important and as joyous for me was knowing that I had Nemanja Vidic next to me, that Owen Hargreaves was going to run through brick walls, that Darren Fletcher was going to give everything he had to fill in for the likes of a Cristiano. Carlos Tevez was going to chase the ball to 3 or 4 different people before he had a sniff of even getting to it. I can go on and on and on about the players that we had, but I think only great teams have those feelings about their teammates.
Would you say that was the best United team ever?
I think it'd be disrespectful for me to say that, but I think we'd be able to challenge. If you put 3 of the best teams in Man United's history, that team would be in it and it would be fighting against the others, definitely.
Well, that season, as we mentioned, he won the title, breezed through the group stage in the toughest competition around, the Champions League, 16 points from a possible 18.
It felt special.
Yeah?
I've been to semi-finals, I've been to quarters, I've been to last 16s and been knocked out, but there was a... What the specialness was in that we kept finding ways to win games. We could do it multiple ways. We could blast teams away 3 or 4 before half time and just end the game. We could pass teams to death. We could play on the counter attack. We could sit deep and be resolute and have the weapons to hurt them on the break. And it just felt special. And the game when we played in the Nou Camp against Barcelona in the semi final, and we kept a clean sheet. And we should have won the game. Cristiano missed a penalty. I kind of got a feeling then that, yeah, we're a special team. Bearing in mind they had like Thierry Henry, Messi, Eto'o, I mean, Good Johnson. They had big players in that team, man. Backed up by the Chavis and people like that. They were like, crazy team. I just felt we could keep them out. And again, that went back to my point about being, people talk about that team and you always go to Tevez, Rooney, Ronaldo, and rightly so. But in them two semi-finals, it was about rolling your sleeves up and being hard to play against and hard to beat. And that's what we were.
Man, also a wonder goal from Paul Scholes in the game at Old Trafford.
Oh, unreal. Unreal scenes.
That question, I was being a little bit sneaky when I was asking you who was the best player in that United squad, because I was kind of thinking you might answer Paul Scholes. Obviously, Cristiano Ronaldo is a different breed and he's had the recognition of that. But Paul Scholes is the name that pros often come up with, I think, way more than civilians would expect. What is it about Paul Scholes that people who aren't at that level don't get?
I think Scholes, the way I'd put it, was Scholes was probably the most enjoyable teammate I had to play with. He's the one I used to purr and I used to... he'd do something and I'd go, oh, stop it, Scholes. Oh, my God.
Like what?
I'd commentate during the game. Like, he'd pass the ball, but he'd bend it round one of the opposing strikers into Giggsy or into Cristiano or to Bex or something like that, Nani or whatever. But he was like he was playing games on the pitch. I'm just trying a little technique out, a new technique that I've done in my front room the other day. And that's what he was like. And I used to go, stop it, man. Scholesy, leave. Nah, come on, man, leave it alone. I remember Bobby Zamora one time looked at me and went, oh, Ree, Jesus Christ, look at that. He was playing against us because the way he's bending the ball around people and just like, he'd set up a goal or something. And Giggsy was a little bit the same. They'd set up a goal and just make it look so easy and so classy. And I'd sprint up the pitch because I was always first to celebrate. I'd be there. And in the huddle, I'd be going, oh, thank you for letting me be on the pitch with you guys. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Pleasure to be on the pitch. And they used to think I was bonkers, but I used to love it. I was like a fan.
Oh, that's so sweet, Ria. Do players do that a lot, commentate on games as they're underway?
No, I was just a lunatic. I'm a football freak. Like, I love it. And I will sit... My mates know that some of the way I talk about... If they need a fan cam on me in the studio at BT, seriously, because I'm up and down, I'm all over the place, I'm emotional, I can be volatile, obviously. I'm every single emotion... And every single fan, if they watched it, they'd see a lot of themselves a lot of the time. And I'm so animated, but I can't help it. And I don't even support after teams that I'm talking about or looking at and I'm in the room for. It's just football does it to me.
Well, let's go back to that Barcelona semi-final, because you came off the field at the Bernabeu way back at the start of the noughties, feeling like, OK, this is where I've got to get to and this is the test that I need to be able to pass. But when you return to Spain with Man United and that game at the Nou Camp, you've got the feeling there that now you're there, now you're ready.
Yeah, and I think it was like there comes a time sometimes, like, this is where the acid test is for this team. Let's see where we're at. And I came off the pitch that day feeling like we could contain them, but we can hurt them. And at that point, I just thought that I don't think there's anybody that's going to be able to stop us. I just didn't feel them scoring. You ride your luck a little bit here and there. And there's a burning desire. I don't want that feeling again of coming off the pitch and feeling like... inadequate, inept, a class below. Like, it's an embarrassing feeling and your pride takes an absolute battering and you're fearful and scared of that feeling again. Do you know what I mean? So you could see that in the way that we performed, I think, that day in that semi-final. The one at Old Trafford, even there as well, defending and bodies on the line and the whole team in tune with the way we're playing, understanding our roles individually as a team. I mean, it all just came together. And that feeling at Old Trafford when the whistle goes and you're going to get in the final... your first final. That's one of the biggest feelings as well.
The 2008 UEFA Champions League final was the first ever all-English club final in the history of the competition. Manchester United and Chelsea took centre stage in Moscow, with United chasing their third European Cup victory on the 40th anniversary of their first win back in 1968. For Chelsea, this was their first ever final in Europe's premier club competition.
2008 then, of course Barcelona would figure again in your Champions League future, but we'll maybe come onto that a bit later on. But 2008, you've reached the final. It's an all-English affair. Kind of a strange time, actually, because I mentioned back at the start, this was summer of 2008, there was the Euros happening, England hadn't qualified, and there you were facing Chelsea. How did you feel about it being an all-Premier League affair? A bit proud on one level. On another level, though, would you prefer it to be like a continental giant rather than a team you faced during the league season?
I didn't like it because, again, it reminded me a little bit of this year. I think Liverpool were probably happy that Real Madrid got through to the final. And I would have preferred... Who did Chelsea play in that semi-final? Liverpool. Yeah, they played Liverpool, so it was never going to happen. But I would have preferred them to play another European team from another league. But more importantly, this Chelsea team was a top team. We played them so many times, and you just knew it was going to be a real tough game. Mm. But when you play an English team as well, it's like that never goes away. You play Real Madrid and you beat Real Madrid in the final. The noise is over there. It's a bit further away. Whereas at that time as well, social media wasn't as prominent and stuff. The noise will be drowned out a little bit because of the distance. Whereas if you lose to a team in England, that's a never-ending hell.
Right.
Unless you would go on and win it again yourself.
On a continental level, it's like a derby, essentially. Plus, you had the fact that, as you mentioned in the past, you were going to be meeting up with a whole bunch of the Chelsea players in a couple of days' time after the final for an England game against the United States.
Yeah, and that was I was fearful of that as well. The thought of having to go to meet up with England and meet all of those Chelsea players who wouldn't have been able to have that little smile or glint in their eye when talking to me. Or I'd look down the table and probably see them talking to somebody else. I'd automatically think that they're talking about beating us and stuff. It would have made me hate being there, but also being around them. So so many different dynamics to it that just meant it was just impossible to see any other outcome than winning.
Wow. Did you give them a lot of grief when you turned up for England then, having won the thing?
No. I don't think that was... That's not my style. As much as I would celebrate, I wouldn't have done that around them. My kind of respect levels would have been definitely to underplay them feelings. But I actually didn't. I don't think I went. I think I went and I turned up injured after the Champions League final. Hmm. If you watch the final back, I was limping right near the end of the final. I'd done something to my calf. And so I was never going to play, and I didn't play in that game.
Manchester United field three former Champions League finalists, Van der Sar, Evra and Hargreaves, who has been preferred to Nani and Park Ji-sung in Sir Alec Ferguson's final selection cut. The manager has made much of the youth of his team. In fact, both sides have an average age of just over 28. Four former Champions League finalists in the Chelsea team, Ballack, Makélélé, Carvalho and Ashley Cole, who's shaken off that training injury to the point that Wayne Bridge is not even on the Chelsea bench.
The final itself then in Moscow, and your captain, I think you were acting captain, is that right?
Yeah, well, I shared the captaincy that year I played most of the games I was captain. Gary Neville was injured, and me and Giggsy were kind of sharing it that year. I started, and then so I wear the armband, and you realise again the magnitude again, if you didn't understand it already, that you go into the press room before the press conference, before the final, the night before at the stadium. You can't get in. It's like sardines. It's absolutely jam-packed, people jostling for position, noisy, and you realise, well, this is going everywhere. Everyone is interested in this. Every single news feed will have this, and it's like, okay. But then it's about managing that and managing the enormity of what you're going to try and achieve. That's the big part, I think, that everyone knows about the physical side of it and going out and playing and stuff, but if you don't manage the mental side of it, and then you can come unstuck and the opportunity will pass you by.
How much bigger are the demands and the responsibilities when you are captain?
For me, it wasn't. I just done my normal thing, my normal routine. I think most importantly, you look around the room to make sure and see everyone's still doing the normal things. Most of the time you look at it, if people are doing something that's out of the ordinary and you don't normally see them doing that, then you'd kind of like step in and speak and just, I don't know, work out where they're at. But I think for a captain is to kind of try and normalise the situation for everybody else and keep a lid on it in that sense, but also go out there and perform to your best abilities, that people look at you and go, actually, he's calm, he's assured, he's comfortable. The moment any of the players, but especially when you've got the armband and you're at the front, and people look at you and think, shit, he looks nervous, he looks overawed, he looks anxious, you can't let that seep out of you at any point.
Looking round that dressing room prior to the game, I don't know how much you can remember, but just from the kind of people they were, who would be the players who would be just dealing with it like another day at the office, and the players who maybe were struggling with the tension?
That was the pleasing thing for me. When I looked down around the changing room, I didn't see anybody that was nervous. Giggsy, Scholesy, they've been there already. Owen Hargreaves, he's been there already. Everybody in that changing room has won trophies. Not everyone's won the Champions League, but everyone's won trophies and knows what it takes to win trophies. So that was a comforter. But I looked around and I looked at Wazza and I looked at Tevez and I looked at Cristiano. I looked at Hargreaves especially. And they looked confident. We'll get this done. Like, that's the vibe I was getting. And that's how we came out of the traps. We should have been 3 or 4 up in the first half.
Neatly worked. Clipped in towards Ronaldo! Manchester United strike first! And guess who? Cristiano Ronaldo's first ever goal against Chelsea is his 42nd of this remarkable season, and the champions of England are closing in on the European title. Essien can't deal with him. Essien has some scabby to do. What a pass from Rooney. Ronaldo's early cross. Tevez, good stop by Cech. Away as far as Carrick, and a fantastic save by Petr Cech. Driven in low towards Carlos Tevez. Oh, he made some kind of contact, but not enough. But what a chance to double Manchester United's lead. So far, so good for Manchester United, and particularly for their star man, Ronaldo.
We should have been 3 or 4 up in the first half. I thought they got a bit lucky with their goal. But I don't know. There was a confidence in our dressing room. I felt it. I felt that we were confident. We weren't overconfident, and I think that's the balance you got to find. But we were ready to go out there and rock and roll.
Cristiano Ronaldo got the opening goal. As you mentioned, Carlos Tevez had a couple of good chances in that first half. And Chelsea were the better side then after the second half. Your old England teammate Frank Lampard with the equaliser.
Comfortably away by Ferdinand, only as far as Lampard. Essien, it's more his area of the field. It'll come for Lampard, and Chelsea a level.
Was there a particular reason, do you think, why the game swung? And What are your memories? What comes to mind when you think of that final?
Yeah, you're right, for a game of two halves. I think first half I felt we were in complete control. And the good thing about that, it felt like our forwards all expected to score. I could feel that they expected to score the goals. And they played with a freeness and a freedom in that first half that you don't normally see in finals. Hmm. Normally finals are like where everyone's kind of uptight and...
Yeah, particularly two teams from the same league.
Yeah, exactly. And I think we were really, we came out of the traps flying. And then second half, they kind of just got a grip of the game. And I think fatigue set in to us massively.
Slipped at a crucial moment. Found Ashley Cole, and he's back on his feet. And Drogba goes for goal and hits the post. Brilliant effort by the man who won the FA Cup final a year ago. Forward towards Tevez. Dealt with by Carvalho. But the big night out in Moscow will go on and on and on. 90 minutes played, nothing to separate Manchester United and Chelsea.
It's been a long, hard season. We'd won the league. That takes a lot out of you as well. That's why it's so hard, and you have to respect teams that win the league and win the Champions League. And winning the league in the Premier League as well is a different kettle of fish. I think the physical aspect of it, that it takes out of you physically and mentally, compared to a lot of other leagues, is very different. It's much more taxing. We suffered a bit fatigue-wise. A couple of our players were getting cramp in extra time. You get to extra time, and I'll be honest with you, at extra time, I was just thinking, I just want us to get to penalties now. Not that I was confident that we'd win penalties, but I just thought, like, I don't feel that we're going to get over the line and win this game in this next extra time period, because physically we were shot. And we were just like a boxer, just hanging on and waiting for the final whistle.
Did you give a team talk in between the 90 minutes and the extra time period?
No, the gaffer gives a team talk, but you go around telling people to come, because obviously Drogba got sent off as well.
Yeah.
And so you're just like making sure that like people are calm and cool and collected and don't get caught up in anything, and concentration, these moments. I think that's a big thing, that when you're a kid, you don't talk about the word concentration, but you've got to concentrate in those situations, because a lot of games are decided by a lapse in concentration and staying on all the time. The moment you switch off, normally something happens. Someone gets away from you, someone gets an extra yard, they get a head start on you, or you're out of position the moment you switch off. And so it's just about staying switched on and switching others on. That's where captains, that's where people that talk and leaders come in. You've got to do a lot of that to make sure that you get your team over the line in that sense.
See, that's one of the things that, beyond the physical aspect of being a top-level footballer, I think is the most mind-boggling, is the ability to focus for 90 minutes. I imagine that probably brain surgery and, you know, rocket scientists, that kind of thing, maybe they need to be that kind of focused, but I doubt many of us are able to maintain that kind of game in, game out, to the level that you need to succeed to the extent that, you know, that you did, for example, in 2008. Was that something you had to learn? Were you always able to be focused for the full 90?
Well, the elite players do that better than everyone else. That's one of the key components of elite players. Elite players aren't the ones that switch on and off or come in and out of games. The elite players are the ones that are consistently tuned in more than anybody else. Like I said, if you're not tuned in, your concentration levels switch off for one right. moment. Normally, the opposition get a chance, and then at that level, normally they score.
But was that natural to you? Was that something you had to learn?
I had to learn, and you train yourself, and a lot of it is in games. I wasn't a natural talker in the games, but I knew that the more I talked, the more that kept me alive and kept me switched on and kept me concentrated, but also it helped others. And then that's where leadership comes in, I think. If you're talking to others, the moment you say someone's name, you haven't even got to give them any insightful information. It's just the trigger is maybe the voice and the loudness of your voice and pricking someone to go, oh, yeah, okay, yeah, I've got to be alive. And that keeps them on their toes, and so that they're ready for a counter-attack. They're in a position to stop, or ready in a position to exploit a weakness in your opposition team. Those little details, you're not trained often enough when you're a young kid. I had to learn that in my career to become somebody who could lead and somebody who could actually stay concentrated for the best part of games.
Did you enjoy being captain?
Yeah, I mean, I loved it. I think, listen, it didn't change me the way I played. Like, if I didn't wear the armband, that didn't define me, that wearing the armband. If I didn't wear the armband, it didn't mean I'd shout less. I was always one of the loudest on the team, if not the loudest. I was same around a training ground, because that was just natural to me. That was just the way I was. And I think great captains are the ones that make others better. And either that's through inspirational performances or through, like I said, talking and cajoling and inspiring and encouraging, but also giving those stern talks to and shouts and shouts that get people on side quickly. You've got to be able to have that good balance and know how to talk to certain people, certain players. You know what pricks a certain player in the right way to get a positive reaction and whatnot. So there's leadership, but it comes in very different forms.
A lot of that sounds like the basis of good management as well. Has that ever been anything you've been tempted by, that avenue?
Yeah, I was doing my badges and stuff like that, and coaching and management was something that I was 100% interested in doing before a few things happened in my personal life.
Right.
At the later stages of my career. Once those things happened, it kind of turned me off, and I had to have a new focus, which has obviously been media and other things since then. So, but who knows, one day maybe I might go back to it, but that ship may have sailed.
All right, well, let's return to late one night in Moscow. As you say, Man United are kind of on the ropes.
Tucked into Ashley Cole, he caught them out there. He's got away from Hargreaves. Play back, Michael Ballack, Frank Lampard. Oh, hit the crossbar, Joe Cole. And for the second time, Chelsea are denied by the woodwork. First Drogba, now Lampard. It just won't go in.
Everyone's getting cramp, everyone's stretching.
And nobody's going to bed. I think they're all suffering. All suffering. Now what?
Well, you can't raise your hands in those situations. It's ridiculous. And a red card for Didier Drogba for the slap. He looks mystified. Didier Drogba becomes only the second player ever to be sent off in a European Cup final. Totally unnecessary. And penalties it will be. The season, which started back in August with a shootout between these two, will end here in May in exactly the same way.
You're feeling it in your legs, maybe a little bit in the head as well. I'm not sure. You're looking for penalties. Were United prepared for penalties? Is that something you guys used to practice?
Not overly, no. I mean, because even when we came down to penalties, the manager hadn't picked. We hadn't had a set list of who was taken and what numbers. The manager, I remember we got to penalties and the manager pulled us in and was like, right, guys, who wants to take one?
Did you put your
and
hand
I vividly
up?
Remember, I vividly remember Patrice Evra saying, I don't want one. I don't want to take one. And you, again, it hits home, actually. Wow, this is huge. I think I was eighth on the list, I think I was. I was after Giggsy. And the amazing thing, and I don't think these boys got enough credit, Nani and Anderson were two young kids. The manager brought them on specifically to take penalties. And that's the trust that he showed in them too, to do that in their mentality. Forget technique. He trusted in their mentality that they just didn't give a toss. They just would go on there and think, we're ready for this, we'll take it. And sometimes youth, it brings that. You're not overthinking things. You're not worried about missing. I'm here. I love the moment. Where a more experienced player sometimes think a bit too deep about it, and that can happen. The guys all took their numbers, and I think I was eighth or ninth or whatever it was. And I swear to you, when Giggsy took his penalty and I thought Anelka would go up and score his...
You were next.
The closer it got to me, the more I lost my legs. And I really don't know how I would have got from the halfway line down to the penalty spot without crawling.
You mentioned in your book, actually, Two Sides, that you're standing there with your arm around Michael Carrick almost just to stay upright.
Yeah, I've never felt anything like it in my life, other than probably after a heavy night out. But my legs were just like, I swear, I couldn't feel them. It was just like, I was thinking, how am I going to kick the ball like this? I was gone, serious. It was just crazy what it does to you. And the enormity, because of the enormity of what the occasion was, and it just, I allowed it probably to get to me too much. And God knows what would have happened if I'd have had to go and take a penalty.
By this point, it is sudden death. So it's down to each individual kick. You've won the coin toss as captain. And Tevez has gone up. He's put the first one away. Ballack answers. Michael Carrick scores. Belletti for Chelsea. Then up comes Cristiano Ronaldo and he misses the penalty.
The man who scored with his head down at the other end earlier tonight. Maybe the best player in the world against maybe the best goalkeeper in the world. He saved it! Some things are just meant to be. The man who has been unable to stop scoring all season, stopped halfway through his run-up, and Petr Cech kept him out.
And he was pretty affected by that, I think.
Oh, massively. He was there. And when we actually... I couldn't believe he'd missed, to be fair, because he'd smashed everything home. And all season, he was the one that was kind of getting us out of any holes that we were in. If we were drawing on either the result, bang, Cristiano stepped up. And it was just like fate, really, that he was the one to miss. And you start thinking, is it written in the stars that we miss and our biggest player misses the all-important penalty in the final? You start looking into stuff like that, even when you're standing out there. Everything slows down. And then Anelka goes up after Giggsy scores with a great penalty. Anelka goes up. Well, John Terry missed, didn't he?
Yeah. Yeah, he falls over.
And it will be left to John Terry to take the penalty, which could put the European Cup in his hands with one kick of the ball to give them the trophy. Oh, he's missed it! He's missed it! I think he clipped the outside of the post on its way past. Ronaldo is reprieved and the shootout will go on. It's 4-4.
I have to say, my theory on penalties is that the team that misses first invariably wins them in a shootout, but I doubt that was what was going through your head at that point. Really, I've never obviously been anywhere near a penalty shootout and I have no idea what the feeling is of knowing you might have to take one and in the meantime standing helpless and watching your teammates step up for what should be a fairly simple operation, which becomes one of the most difficult things to do, one of the most high-pressure moments in your entire career. Can you explain what it feels like, apart from like the morning after a heavy night out?
Well, if you can imagine walking up to a goal in a park and something that should be so run-of-the-mill that when you're in the park with no fans there and you're just messing about with your mates, you walk up to a penalty, feels like such an easy task.
Right.
But imagine walking up to that goal and the goal becomes a five-a-side goal and you've got some like a bus in front of the goal and you've got probably a yard either side of the goal, the bus to hit. That's what it feels like. It's an impossible, it feels like, whoa, this is like a really hard, near impossible task. For somebody who's not used to taking penalties, like if you spoke to Alan Shearer or you spoke to Rooney or Ronaldo or someone like that, they'd probably go, oh, this is, I love it. I love walking up there and taking these penalties. But people like myself, who's not used to taking penalties, that's what it became for me. I was like, whoa, this is like crazy.
Wow. Yeah, and you're stood there, and you can see this actually on the footage, you know, that as Anelka steps up, you're praying that Van der Sar is gonna stop him. And you're, I think, pointing instructions to Van der Sar.
Match point, Manchester United. And Nicola Anelka, a Champions League winner with Real Madrid, a former Liverpool and Manchester City player, with the responsibility of taking this key penalty. Anelka. Van der Sar saved it! United again!
Yeah, I was pointing for him to dive the other way. So he saved the penalty. He went the opposite way to what I was telling him, which was great. I had to thank him after. Don't ever listen to me again. I was pointing one way and he dived luckily the other way and he saved it. And Anelka would have been one of the ones I'd say would definitely score.
Right.
And what I mean by that is that it goes back to the point about what penalties in pressurised situations can do. The two people that you expect to score penalties, Anelka and Cristiano Ronaldo, both missed them in the final.
So when Van der Sar makes that save, and you seem to have a pretty strong memory of these instants, what are you feeling?
Oh, mate, if I've always said this, if you could bottle that feeling at that moment, that second, every single person would be addicted to it. You can't get any higher than that. It's just unreal. The circumstances to win like that is better than winning it and the 90th minute it goes. And it's the worst and best way to win. I mean, it's the worst way to lose, obviously, the penalties, but it's the best way to win. Like, it's crazy if you understand that. It's a mad way to think about it, but it is. But I remember running.
The newly crowned champions of England are the new champions of Europe. 2008 is another Manchester United vintage year. Wembley, Barcelona, Moscow. Manchester United, three times European champions.
I remember looking back and seeing Cristiano laid out on the floor, because I think he's had the biggest relief out of everybody. But it was it was a culmination of all that hard work for the last two or three years that we'd gone through as a squad together, and that was the crowning and defining moment for that squad. That team would never have been fulfilled if we hadn't won that trophy, because we were obliterating everyone around us in the league, back-to-back league titles that year. And it was like this: you, to be considered really great at Man United, you've got to win the Champions League.
Rio Ferdinand and Ryan Giggs lift the trophy. 2008 was always going to be a special year for Manchester United. Tears of remembrance for Munich, now tears of joy in Moscow.
I mean, this is a relevant conversation these days with another team from Manchester, and whether they'll ever have that cachet to them unless they can finally get to the Champions League final and win it. The number of big teams, and is this something that you think of in moments like that, the number of big teams that just for tiny margins don't get the title and don't go down in history?
Yeah, and that's what it is. You're bang on, James. I think it's tiny margins and it's details. Small details in games are very much defining of an era, of a team. You look at Man City the other day, the last minute of the game, do you know what I mean? It's the final few minutes of the game where it changes everything. And in the last few years, that's happened to City quite a lot. And where they've dominated games and they've been as good as you could ask them to be in those pressurised situations and on top for long periods, but then there's a small detail, bang, changes everything. And so, and again, that can define the greatness of a team. People were talking about this City team as being possibly the greatest ever Premier League team we've seen. Well, that conversation will be very different now because they don't win the Champions League. And that's just unfortunately the way it is. And as great as they've been in the Premier League, they've not been all-conquering. And that's no slight on them. They're a fantastic team. They're well-drilled, taken the game in terms of points and consistency to levels never, ever been seen before. But again, there's that little difference and that little bit of something else is missing, which is the Champions League, and that's just the way it is.
I do want to ask you about lifting the trophy, because I know that lifting the trophy, and you hadn't had the chance to do this on your own with the Premier League before this, but you did get to be the first man to hold the Champions League trophy into that Moscow sky. How was that for you?
Yeah, I mean, it was emotional, I think, on a couple of fronts. Is that we were watching the Chelsea team go up the stairs and get their runners-up medals. Sir Bobby Charlton came down and started speaking to me, and obviously he's an absolute legend and great in football, let alone at Man United. And he just kind of said a few nice words to me about lifting it and the importance of it to the club, but also your captain and what that means. And those words coming from someone like him, because I think people have to understand as well, when you're at a club like Man United, they're steeped in the success that it's had and the history it's got. And you walk around the corridors of that club and you're desperate to kind of etch your name into the history as well and be successful, that you walk around legends like that, and I felt inferior. I felt like I wasn't at that level. And I can't have a conversation. I can't sit at that table yet until you've won the Champions League, until you've won multiple Premier Leagues. And I was always fighting and searching for those titles to be able to, and to be an integral part of those teams as well, importantly. And that was a real push of mine from within. And that was one of them moments where you go, you know what, I can actually shake Sir Bobby's hand and look him in the eye and feel comfortable now at this moment. And it's quite emotional and compounded. With that was my mum screaming my name. I could see her.
Where was she?
So she was in the stands with the families, but she was climbing. My mum was like she was quite loud and excitable with situations like this, and she was climbing over the different chairs because a lot of the fans had left by then, the corporate fans. So she was trying to get closer to where we was, and I could see her. I could hear her voice pinging out above everyone else's, and I saw her, and just seeing how excited and how happy she was just made me get emotional as well. And I remember just welling up. And I remember Nemanja Vidic was next to me and he just said, "Rio, not here," in that Serbian hard exterior that he's got. And I was like, "Yeah, you're right, you're right." And just kind of got myself together. And then, as you say, you go up the steps and you lift a trophy.
Wow. But you talk about concentration, and even more so in a Champions League final, and even more so when you go to extra time, 120 minutes, and then you've got to stand and the tension of the penalty shootout. And now it's done and you've won. And all that stress is fading. And there's this incredible release of emotion, entire season's worth almost, of dreams and hopes and pressure as captain of the heritage, of the legacy that you've got to live up to. And suddenly you're there. And in that instant, you've done it all.
Yeah, and that's what you mean. I think there's so many layers of pressure coming from all angles. And you've not even mentioned personal pride.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? And like having to go home and tell your family that, yeah, we lost, which weren't good enough. That feeling, which I later felt, is just a disastrous feeling. It's a disgusting feeling to have. That's one that you wouldn't want to bottle and put on the shelves. But it is a difficult situation, but it is one of the most satisfying, but also it's filled with relief as well. There's all the adulation and all of that that comes with it, but the relief and satisfaction of all the hard work. And like I say, that was like probably 2 or 3 years in the making, that getting to that point. And people talk about overnight successes in football. It doesn't happen. Overnight success is a myth. It's a lie. They're setting kids false hopes that things happen overnight. It doesn't.
Mm.
It's hard work that gets you to those points, and it's commitment, work ethic, to kind of succeed, and hard work is a massive part of that.
Absolutely. Let's talk about your overnight success in Moscow, or at least overnight, what happened there. You say, again in your book, "I don't remember generally our victories as clearly as our defeats," but I'm not sure how much you remember of the celebrations after the Champions League final. Perhaps you can tell us, though, how you ended up at 3 a.m. taking a shower fully dressed.
Yeah, it's later than that it was. The game didn't finish till about 1 a.m. or something like that. So we were all shattered. Given extra time, penalties, etc. as well. And then we get back to the hotel, and then obviously the night kicks off, everyone has a drink and stuff. And I remember you obviously flying around the room, enjoy, everyone's happy, high five. And I remember going to David Gill, who was the CEO at the time, and saying, "Listen, Mr. Gill, who are we signing then?" And he was like, "Rio, please just enjoy the night. Please let it go." And I was like, "Oh, just tell me, please, so I can enjoy it a bit more. Let me know who we're getting." And he was like, "No, just enjoy the night and we'll speak another time." I remember it was the drunkest I've ever been in my whole life. It was the most sick I've ever been after a night out. Because as well, like, there was a couple of fans that just managed to blag their way into it, into the party. And they started giving it like, "I'll bet you can't drink," and blah, blah. And I went drink for drink with this guy in terms of downing pints. And I think he got to about 3 pints and stopped, and I went to about 5 just to shut him up and just to let him know where he stands. Probably the worst decision I made, because after about an hour and a half, 2 hours later, I was in a bad way, man. Everyone was going to bed by then. I think this was about 6 o'clock in the morning. I think we had to get on a flight quite early.
So you didn't go to bed that night?
No. Mm. And my dad came into the room with me to make sure that I didn't go back to go to sleep, because the flight, we'd have to get up soon and go to the airport. So then he said, go in the shower. And he came back in the shower after a couple of minutes, and I was under the shower, like, with my shirt and stuff on. So, like, he was like, what is going on with this guy? What's he doing? Lucky I had a spare. Dried it, hair dried a few bits and pieces, and then got to the airport. I was being sick in the toilet, everywhere. I felt horrendous. And then we got on the plane. I was obviously still drunk on the plane, on the coach, sorry. And I was singing my heart out on the, I mean, the lads, I think Fletch was saying, I wish we had a video. Like, Fletch and Wazza, the songs I was singing probably wouldn't be good for airing. Yeah, I was singing, doing mad stuff. And then we got on the plane and I was singing mad songs. And I remember I was sat behind Sir Bobby Charlton and the directors and the gaffer and stuff like that. And everyone was like saying, shut up, be quiet. But I was just singing mad. I think I was singing Bob Marley songs and things like that, like just crazy stuff.
Just on your own?
Yeah, I was so pissed. I was so drunk. It was like a joke. And I remember it's like a couple of people saying, like, actually, you're embarrassing now. It's embarrassing the state you're in. And I remember the manager saying, when we got off the plane, there's a picture, I saw it in the boardroom at the ground the other day. There's a picture of, like, I was holding one of the trophies. I think I had the Champions League and Giggsy had the Premier League. And we got off the plane and with the manager, and the manager was telling me to put my tie on. And I had my tie around my head on the plane. And I was going, like, just, I was all over the place, just enjoying it. And he was like, no, come on, take your tie off. And I don't think I actually put the tie on, but yeah, I was in a bad state of affairs.
Well, if any occasion merited it, winning the Champions
League. That was exactly my thinking.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, it's fantastic. Again, you talked about not being able to enjoy successes, just being, because of your focus, always looking to the next thing. And you mentioned Ben Foster, I think it was, when he was with United, being a little bit bewildered at the fact that coming in from a victory, you'd be immediately thinking about the next game, the next challenge, etc. But that was that the one time that you really just went for it?
Yeah. I mean, listen, I enjoyed when we won the league. Trust me, I enjoyed it. But not to that level in terms of just going, getting obliterated and going crazy. But if we won the league, we'd go out, we'd all ring round and organise, right, the Grapes pub in Manchester. Let's all meet there at X time and we'll go on a bit of a pub crawl and get to a bar at some point. And we enjoyed that. I'd sing songs and I had the fans in there and sung with the fans, which was great. Great moments. But those times only lasted that night, really. Every night, I think the first time I won the league, the game was a Sunday, the day we won it, Arsenal got beat by Leeds. I went out that Sunday night, went out on the Monday, probably went out on the Wednesday and Thursday as well, then played Everton on the Saturday. So I played stinking of booze. I remember Wazza said to me, "Real, you stink, what, you've been out again? You was out last night." I said, "No, this is a week's worth of drinking." But again, these were very short-lived. That one being probably a bit separate and a bit different, but all the others were very short-lived. You'd win it, you'd celebrate, right, on holiday, thinking about next season, preparing for next season. And that's how it kind of went all the time.
United were European champions. How come you didn't do an open-top bus tour or any kind of celebration like that?
I couldn't believe it myself. United were too accustomed by that point of winning. Like, the 90s, the 2000s was what probably the most decorated years of the Man United history. And we were in the midst of that. And I just think the club become very complacent and used to winning and just thought, don't need to do it. We'll be here again soon. That's the vibe that I got. And I remember getting back to the airport from Moscow, and there was a couple of hundred fans there, and I was thinking, where the hell is everyone? What we've achieved? We won the league and we've won the cup. And I remember a lot of the foreign boys were like, if we was in our country, we would not be able to get out of this airport. And the manager, the telling thing about it, is I remember the manager said, right, well, guys, well done. Thank you for everything. I'll see you on the first day of pre-season. Go and have a good summer. And I'm like, are we not doing an open top bus tour to the MEN Arena or something like that, where there's going to be... I thought it was a wind-up, thinking that, like... And I was going, there's nothing prepared, nothing. We're not doing nothing. No, not doing anything. I couldn't believe it for the life of me. We've just done the double, Champions League and the league, and we're not even going to go and celebrate with our fans. I can't believe it.
Do you think that had it not been Chelsea that you played in that final... And not that they didn't deserve to be there, that they did, but if that season it had been a Real Madrid or a Barcelona or Bayern or whoever, Juve at a stretch, but if it had been one of those clubs, that it would have not only brought more fans out for your return, but also made that United team be remembered in a different way. You mentioned before about the fact that maybe people forget what a great side that was.
Yeah, I don't know. That's like an if, buts. Or you don't know, maybe, you're not sure. It could be that, but I don't know. I do think it takes a little bit of the edge off it, well, the gloss off it. Like your Liverpool versus Spurs final, it's not really one you look at and go, oh, brilliant. Milan-Juventus at Old Trafford, like you look at those games and you go, wow, like it's a dead game. But it also it's like you want two teams, the Champions League is about different countries competing, great teams from different countries, and you want that in the final. But at the same time, you want the best teams, and the two best teams get to the final invariably.
Well, Man United were spoiled by success, and what was it, three finals in 4 years?
Yeah, I think that's what it was. It's crazy. And every one of those years we got to the final, we'd won the league.
Yeah, remarkable. Well, the next two finals weren't the kinds that you'd want to bottle up and market, both against Barcelona. And you've said that they're so similar, they blurred together in your mind as a single trauma. If Moscow was the greatest moment of your career, were those finals against that Barcelona team the most difficult?
I mean, the first one in Rome, we went into that as favourites. That game in the first 10 minutes, we could have finished that game in the first 10 minutes as well. They cleared off the line, we missed chances, and you're thinking, well, and then they just hit us with a sucker punch, bang.
Barcelona have been by far the better team on the night. Manchester United made an excellent start to the game, but that was all it was. Because as soon as Samuel Eto'o scored after 10 minutes, there was only ever going to be one winner of the 2009 Champions League final, and that was Barcelona.
And then we never ever see the ball again after that, really. That was hard to take, that one, because you really genuinely think that I thought we were the better team. Not on the day, but going into it, we're the favourites, we're the better team. And what we'd done for the last couple of years as a team, you think we've got to win, we should win this. And the opportunity was as well, this separates us, the argument. There's no argument. We're the best Man United team ever. That's what was at stake. And we never got over the hill in that, and we got beat. But you're looking at two great teams. That's the difference. And then you go to Wembley, and that was probably the most embarrassing day, because there was no arguments. We got absolutely pumped that day by a team who I consider the best team to play football.
Barcelona, they've done it at Wembley again. Barcelona, champions of Europe, repeat their win over Manchester United in the final from a couple of years ago. And on the night, Barcelona were nothing short of sensational. It's one of the greatest performances you will ever see from any team, anywhere. And maybe there was no shame for Manchester United in losing to a display that good.
Best club team to play football. And so the one up part of it says, yeah, I mean, we're embarrassed, pride shot, absolutely drilled on the pitch by another team, taken to the cleaners. But then after looking at it and spending time on the beach on holiday afterwards, thinking constantly about it, your next comment is, but they're the best team to ever do it at this level. So it's not that bad, but it's like that takes the edge off it a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, you've been witness to history. A couple other things I just wanted to ask, and they're kind of relating to this. As someone who's been to the very, very top, somebody who's been in a team that dominated other sides, how was the feeling in Rome in 2009? What was it that they did to completely outplay you? And kind of, what was your feeling at the time? Were you commentating through that?
No, I'd never commentated when we were losing. It was only like talking about the good and positive things that players were doing.
But were you talking to yourself, thinking about, you know, watching stuff going, I do not believe that just happened?
Yeah, it's almost like they scored the goal out of nothing, really. And then you go, phew. The biggest thing was that we never really got laid a glove on them after that. They played keep ball with us in both finals. But in Rome, especially, it was the first time that had happened. And you're like, wow, how, why, what, where? And I've always said this. I thought tactically we probably approached both games not to the best of our capabilities. Our team was great. Yeah, we could play different ways, but against a team like Barcelona, I think we played in both finals. We played not to our absolute strengths. We played to their strengths. We played into their strengths more than to our own. By that, I mean we went really high and tried to press them immediately, whereas a lot of the times in the big games, we'd sit and wait for moments, and then we'd win and use our weapons on the break to really hurt them. They enjoyed being pressed. Their dream scenario, Barcelona teams wanted to be pressed. Press us at your peril. That's the way that they played football, which would leave gaps and whatnot. And if you're not a team that's as well drilled as you should be in that scenario, then you get picked off. And that, I feel that's what happened to us.
Hmm. Do you ever watch those games back?
No, never. I think I might have watched the Champions League 2008 game back, but I've never watched the other two.
All right. Well, how long did that stay with you afterwards?
Yeah, I think you've got to bear in mind as well. Like we've won the league both of those years. We won the league, but I go into the summer on the beach on holiday with my family in a state of depression from losing a game. You lose the sight of the fact that you've won a league. You don't enjoy the feeling of walking around and people patting you on the back. They're not patting you on the back when you're walking around like they should be after winning the league. They're going, you know what, unlucky, man. Unlucky. And then one part of you is going, we must have won the league, mate. What are you talking about? But you've been demolished by Barcelona. Took the gloss off two of my league title wins, unfortunately.
Yeah, well, highs and lows of the Champions League. But yeah, not many people kind of done what you did, lifted that trophy up after a victory in the biggest game of all. I'm sure there are so many highs right through your career, but is that the one moment that you can always reach for?
Yeah, I think as you're looking for a one-off game and a moment, like winning the league, it's over a course of a season, but when you win the Champions League, that moment is very hard to surpass, really. I think the feeling that you get, the satisfaction, like I said, I think more than anything, the relief, because of the expectations we had on ourselves as a team.
Mm.
After a couple of years building towards that, was just something that I'd never felt before and I never felt since.
Much like the hangover the next day, indeed. Rhea, that's magnificent. Thank you so much for being with us for this kind of look in the Rio view mirror, if you will. vastly enjoying your new participations in the Champions League, which are every bit as polished and accomplished. And,
I appreciate that. Thank you very much, James.
Not at all. Not at all. No, I think it's... For people like me, who've not been anywhere near it, it's just like such a window into what's really going on. But many, many thanks for your time today. And congratulations again, Rio, Champions League winner.
Thanks a lot, mate. Top man. Really nice to talk to you, man.
And you too.
Hopefully I'll give you a little bit of an insight into what it's like.
Definitely. Too much insight. Pods.